Right now, I'm just grateful that Jill Biden's been taken off the stream deck.
It's one of my favorite things, though.
Great Yo, job. You did such a great job.
I knew there was a Got risk you. That it hadn't actually been taken off.
Executive orders are coming faster than your favorite stoner cousin on a Friday night ordering DoorDash.
Oh my God.
Well, we're talking
the
RFK,
on that one was weird.
JFK, MLK files, and many others, as well as some developments from executive orders earlier this week. Plus, we're going to dive into Stargate, get into the big AI stuff, because we got a lot of reaction to the president's plan for Project Stargate. Not the conspiracy theory / CIA program, but
which totally happened.
The AI thing.
And is declassified.
Yeah.
Yeah, not that one, the other one. Everybody, welcome back to Human Reaction. We're so glad to have you join us today. I've got David Rand, Kyle Mack, Bennett on the buttons. My name is Joe Sheehan. While you're here, before we get started, please smash the like button and subscribe to our channel on YouTube or wherever you're watching the show.
And also, leave us a question down below. Leave us a comment.
And it was not this day.
It's not this day.
But it is not this day.
Leave us a comment because it helps us get the show out and helps boost us in the algorithm. And we have a question for you as we get into the AI talk. Will AI be our new overlords? What do you think of the future of AI? Is Skynet upon us?
I think we've got a lot of risks ahead of us. That's where I'm at. I know you guys are more of the accelerationist types, but I'm happy to play the foil on that one because I'm optimistic. I think there's a lot of good opportunities for AI, but I think there's a lot of potential downsides, and we'll get into those.
I'm just net neutral. I think there's pros and cons with every new technology that exists.
That's fair. And
that is the lamest opinion ever.
But yeah. I feel that way about guns. There's pros and cons to it.
Everyone who's
a moderate, but the genie's out of the bottle, and it's going to happen.
He's sitting on the fence. He's just
waiting to see which way the wind blows.
Both sides got good points.
I'll be the annoying guy. We're like, I see your point, but I see your point too.
Fucking Switzerland.
I'm the Switzerland of this podcast.
I don't think so. You're more the Greenland of this podcast.
No, I'm more the take over Greenland part of this podcast.
Yeah, he's an imperialist only when it's Greenland.
I remain Canada. Neutral, except for Greenland and Canada.
What about Panama?
Yeah, we'll take them too.
Okay.
Anything that's in our sphere, I'm down.
Spherical dominance. Dude,
but like this hemisphere, I'm neutral. or this like section of the
take US, it easy, Monroe. All right.
Jeez. The U.S. is a global empire. Everything's in our sphere.
Yeah, but like I'm saying, peel back some of the nonsense over there. Like, let's stop killing all those people in the Middle East, and then let's just start killing people. I'm kidding.
If you are a small business owner looking for exponential growth, you have to connect with Adam Thune at Intellectual Patriots. He will revolutionize your business game and help you get to the next level. Adam can streamline your business practices and advertising strategies to improve your bottom line. His expertise in data engineering means he can build you the systems you need to collect and analyze market data. His mission is to provide you with invaluable insights to fuel your success. From grant writing and business proposals to digital systems integrations, even AI management, Intellectual Patriots is a one-stop shop for cutting-edge solutions. Don't wait another second. Visit intelpatriots.com to learn more. That's intelpatriots.com. This episode is brought to you by Revved Up Promo, the official apparel partner of Human Reaction. Revved Up is a premier full-service shop specializing in laser engraving, screen printing, and embroidery. Not only are they now making all of our apparel right down the road from us, they can do the same for your brand and ship it to you anywhere in the world. Revved Up helps you navigate the extensive universe of merch options and uses state-of-the-art techniques to showcase your brand in its very best light. So if you want to support our show and our generous sponsor, you can now do so by buying our merch and by turning to Revved Up Promo for your own custom apparel needs. Reach them at revveduppromo.com. That's with two V's and two P's, or just check the show notes for a link.
So speaking of presidents, you probably forgot about, have the release of JFK, MLK, and RFK files in a new executive order, fresh off the press, happened yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Already, people are very confused. Because X started putting out old stuff as if it wasn't old stuff.
And not
And not just old stuff. I saw one I posted in our Discord, which link below if you want to join the Discord, get in the conversation. I posted one that literally said right above the redacted section, I have information that would lead to the arrest of Hillary Clinton. And then it like trails off into redacted territory. And I was like, nice try, internet. Yeah. Nice try.
Yeah, like everybody was talking about MLK having gay orgies, but apparently that was released in 94.
Yeah, apparently we already knew
apparently we knew that.
Well, I mean, there was always a long-term... It's been for a long time what we've been saying. The CIA was monitoring his sex life and using it as a way to try to get him to kill himself. Mm-hmm. Can I even say that?
We'll bleep it.
Maybe.
We'll bleep it.
You know what I mean.
To unalive himself.
So what this new EO does, it gives 15 days for the DNI, the AG, and the president's legal counsel to get a plan together, to present him a plan to release the JFK files.
Gotcha. Now, when you say DNI, Director of National Intelligence, is that the Biden era?
Yes.
Okay.
Because
so not yet.
Tulsi's not in yet.
Right.
Right. So importantly, Mike Benz is calling this lady out in the kind of response to this. Just to summarize, because it's a longer clip, Stacey Dixon is the current one, a Biden employee, not a Trump person, 20-year CIA vet.
Mm, so not very incentivized, per se, to reveal the documents that would provide culpability for the CIA in these events.
Exactly. So there's also, he has a concern of the amount of non-digitized files, which is interesting because if you go to the JFK files from 1994, there was a release in 1994 and another release in 2017. In 1994, there's a website, an archive website of the archivist of the president. And it looks like it was made by Matt Drudge. It's like it's just text, right? But one of it says is most of the files are not digitized. These are only the digitized files.
Hmm.
So whether or not this covers those non-digitized files is where he has a concern on the language.
I see.
Which I think is reasonable. But the language does say, quote, full and complete release of the records.
That would kind of cover it. But then the question comes into play, well, who's digitizing them and to what degree are they going to be incentivized to omit things accidentally or, whoops, that one fell in the shredder.
Yeah. So I think it's going to be a longer release plan than I think people hope for. They were hoping for like day one, he'd say it, it'd get released. That's not going to happen. It's going to be slower than that, although far faster than any president ever. So
right. And the fact that we already have action on it at this stage of the presidency means he has taken the request, you know, the demand for these files to be released very seriously and has, you know, put the wheels in motion to make that happen.
Wasn't day one broken promise?
So disappointed.
Another broken promise.
I'm so disappointed.
Happened
Chase
on
Oliver,
day three.
I feel your pain, bro.
I wish you weren't a liar.
It's rough out here.
So the question is, what are the predictions here? What do you think is going to happen from these releases?
I mean, I think for so long, particularly around JFK and also RFK, like I feel like the presumption has been that the CIA was involved. Like there's a lot of people who say like it seems very likely that that's the case. The story that we've been told about, you know, Lee Harvey Oswald is just not standing up to scrutiny, and I feel like I would hope that the documents would establish that as the prevailing narrative.
And already you have like NBC News and rolling out people who are saying there's nothing to find out here. We know that Lee Harvey Oswald shot the president, all that kind of stuff. What they typically miss is all the stuff that happened after Lee Harvey Oswald. Additionally, the CIA connections to Lee Harvey Oswald when it came to him going to Mexico, applying to go to Cuba, getting denied. We know the CIA was reading his mail, but we don't know what they found out about that. We don't know anything else about those contacts. We know that Helms, Richard Helms, who is the guy who takes over after Dulles, was, you know, himself close confidants and in charge of the MK Ultra program with the Jolly Roger guy.
Jolly West.
Jolly
Roger.
The pirate.
He's a pirate. Yar, would you like some LSD? Yar, So it's all of that stuff that I'm most interested in, but we know that a lot of the MK Ultra files were destroyed. So it's the only reason we have any MK Ultra files is because they forgot about some hard files in a budgetary section, not any of the direct program files.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot still there. Like, are we going to find out everything? I am very skeptical. What I hope to find, my prediction, is hopefully what we'll get is a better sense into the security failures, a better sense into what wasn't investigated with the Dulles Commission. Remember, Kennedy fires Dulles. His you know, predecessor or his the next guy, the vice president,
Lyndon Johnson.
Lyndon Johnson appoints that guy to lead up in the commission with Helms, his protege, Dulles's protege, to lead up to do the commission to find out whether or not who killed JFK. So you got
commission.
Spooks all over the place.
Yeah. Have you heard Danny Sheehan's theory on this?
Any relation?
No, unfortunately, he's a badass. He's RFK's attorney. He's been involved. He was involved in the Pentagon files and a variety of other things. Mm-hmm. And he has done a lot on this. In fact, a great episode to check out if you want to do a deep dive is his appearance on the Danny Jones podcast, which I've been absolutely devouring lately. Anyways, his theory is that so Nixon hired a hit squad to kill Castro, and it was JFK who then, you know, came in. This was while JFK was president. Nixon, mm-hmm. you know, hired this hit squad to kill Castro. JFK messed it up, right, with the Bay of Pigs. And then the hit squad, who were super anti-Castro, were so mad at JFK for abandoning that mission that they were turned on him.
Really?
And they were a part of the assassination.
Interesting. I don't know.
And they were all, like, highly trained in America. Like, they were, you know, basically special ops guys from Cuba who were trained by, you know, the American military. So they were highly capable. So that's his read of what happened.
A grassy knoll theory. That it wasn't the bullet trajectory couldn't come from the window.
Correct.
Interesting. I don't know.
Yeah. It's a very interesting theory. It's worth checking out.
Yeah. And then RFK and MLK, those should be very interesting too, because there's still a lot of questions about the MLK assassination, how it happened, why it happened, and, you know, all that. So,
In more contemporary news, Trump also signed an executive order to ban CBDCs, or central bank digital currencies. Kyle, this is your wheelhouse. Tell us about this one.
Yeah, it was interesting. He was there with David Sachs and signed this in, along with an AI EO as well. But there's more to it than just CBDC ban. It was establishing a working group that's focused on all things crypto. So just kind of like establishing this this group to just get to work now and promote it, because we had Trump at the the Davos crowd. He went out and here said, we're going to be the crypto capital and all this stuff, right? So, like, he's making it a priority. It develops a regulatory framework governing digital assets, stable coins, and the creation of a strategic stockpile. So this would be like the Bitcoin strategic reserve that's been talked. And his plan, as stated, is to buy 5% of the Bitcoin supply. But also, this leaves open for other cryptocurrencies as well. You probably end up getting Ethereum and things like that in there
BSV
as well.
Probably too.
Yeah, keep thinking about that. We'll see about that. It was crossing your fingers there. It establishes David Sachs as the crypto and AI czar who leads the working group. Then it prohibits the establishment, issuing, and promotion of CBDCs.
By the government.
By the government. So central bank digital currencies, most people kind of know that term now, but it's in there. And it also revokes any form of Operation Choke Point that was used under the previous administration.
Central bank digital currency, what is it?
The concept of a central bank digital currency is that you have a digital currency on the blockchain that is, like, managed by a central force, which would be the central bank.
Or the Federal Reserve, in our case.
Federal Reserve. That essentially becomes our new fiat, in a sense. As opposed to something like Bitcoin or a vast number of other blockchain currencies.
Or cash, for that matter.
Or
right?
cash,
It's sort of designed as like an electronic alternative to cash. And the concerns there are, it's completely transparent. All of your transactions could be tracked by the entity.
Well,
distributing
also shut down and things like that. Right. Like giving a central control for the blockchain that this would be associated with would allow you to be like, well, nobody ever makes good decisions after 2 a.m. So we're just going to shut down everybody's wallets.
Yeah,
at that time.
You ate,
like,
too many cheeseburgers today. You can't buy cheeseburgers today.
Yeah, that's where the concern of central bank digital currencies would be, is that type of stuff.
What about like inflationary concerns, like where they're playing.
Oh, yeah. You could just mint new coins. You could just do anything. Like, that's the benefit of something like a Bitcoin, where it's currently on a minting schedule. We haven't reached 21 million yet, but we will reach 21 million in about 100 years, where you need a massive consensus of the network of all the miners to be able to change and update things for Bitcoin, which doing something like, no, we're just going to double the Bitcoin supply. Like, that's pretty much impossible, right? Where
if not you impossible. Just,
pretty much. Like, social engineering is the thing that would change that. Yeah.
You need to persuade all of the node holders to change their stuff all at the same time.
Where if you just have one central authority, they have all the control, mm-hmm. right? So that's the concern with central bank digital currencies. If you do remember, it was Vivek Ramaswamy, who's now like the black sheep of MAGA, apparently. He was brown the one sheep, that he was.
You don't want to get fired like Don Lemon, whatever color you are.
Whatever you are. I forgot about that clip. Yeah, that was the thing that apparently got Don Lemon fired.
Yeah, that was great.
Was him debating with Vivek.
If anything, we owe him just for that. I mean, come on, guys.
We owe him nothing.
Come on, MAGA.
No, apparently he's supposed to be ostracized and we're not supposed to like him anymore. Apparently that's the world we're in right now.
We'll be discussing that in the skiff.
Yeah. So. But he was the one that Trump gives credit to for convincing him on CBDCs and making it a campaign issue. Mm-hmm. So...
Yeah. And then we have Whitney Webb engaged in this, saying that this is a terrible thing. Well, maybe not a terrible thing, but it doesn't solve the problem.
Yeah. And I get where she's coming from with this. So she's a very anti-stablecoin person. And what stablecoins are is these are coins on blockchains that are pegged to a certain value. And there's all sorts of mechanisms that make them peg towards it. The primary ones that people use are USDC, owned by Circle, and Tether. And those are the two major stable coins that exist in the world. And
just to clarify, when you say pegged to a certain value, like USDC and Tether
are both
locked to the value of the dollar. So one USDC is worth $1.
Yeah, you'll see it occasionally go to 99 cents or $1 or something like that, but it stabilizes, and there's reserves that are held for the creation of and the minting of those coins and so forth. One of the concerns that Whitney Webb has, which is a concern to have, is there's a public-private partnership that exists in all of these systems. We've seen it with the social media companies. That's probably the useful example, is like, oh, the government can't violate free speech, but like, look, there's all these like government-funded NGOs, these government-funded non-governmental organizations, right? Mm-hmm. That then do the stuff on the back end, which is what we saw with the Twitter files. And the concern here is, well, the government's just going to go and take over these systems through third parties, social engineering, et cetera, and then kind of have a quasi central bank digital currency, even though it's not like run by the government.
Yeah.
And I think there's always a concern for that.
Well, I think, right? I mean, there's another aspect to this too, that the Federal Reserve is not the government. And so if the EO prohibits the government from doing anything regarding CBDC, does it also prohibit the Federal Reserve? Does it have that explicitly in the language?
I don't know. They're a government-regulated agency, a non-government agency, just like Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac. So they technically should be able to.
So they would fall under that umbrella.
Though I do wonder if EO can do that, executive order alone can do that.
I don't know.
Legally.
I'd be curious.
It's worth saying, too, that at the SEC, SOB 121 was rescinded, which... What this functionally means is that banks are now able to custody crypto. So up until this point, that was banks have wanted to custody crypto over the last few years. They've started to kind of like put the blockchain mechanisms in play. There's a lot of stuff with the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank that there was some FDIC takeover of some of those systems that happened, which is interesting. And there's some conspiracy that to maybe be had there. But now what this probably means is in the relatively near future, you're going to be able to like, you might be able to go to like Wells Fargo or something and have them hold your Bitcoin for you.
Which would be stupid.
Which would be stupid. I would agree with that.
The whole point of Bitcoin was to be your own bank. Non-custodial, mm-hmm. right? You don't need a trusted third party to hold your assets for you.
I would never do it.
But if they're holding it too, they can then use it
not financial
as collateral.
Yeah.
Right. So that means that if you have a bank, if they are holding Bitcoin, they can then use that for overnight lending collateral, or they could use it for whatever on their general, balance sheet to justify their total assets.
General rehypothecation as well, which I would, and that's just like rehypothecation.
What's that?
Loaning out Bitcoin, basically. Oh, okay. The concern I think that I would have around that is that part of the cascading effects of the FTX collapse was a collapse of a ton of Bitcoin lending platforms, including BlockFi. And
I got hit on BlockFi. I was using BlockFi.
Yeah. I had fortunately divested myself from that platform several months earlier because I felt some spidey senses about it. I don't know why. But what happened was they were loaning out your Bitcoin. Like, so you deposit Bitcoin with BlockFi. They give you an incredible interest rate. I mean, and we're talking, you know, at the point when, you know, regular interest rates were a couple percent, they're giving you like 7-8% return on your Bitcoin. What they're doing is they're going around, they're loaning that out to, to levered, you know, speculators basically who are betting on the Bitcoin markets. And when everything went tits up, all those guys defaulted and all the Bitcoin that you had deposited with them was not insured by anything, totally at risk, and a lot of people lost their shirt.
So
I would be concerned that similar mechanisms would be in play here. Obviously, FDIC stuff might come into play, and I'd be curious to know if FDIC insurance would cover Bitcoin the same way it covers cash.
I would
cash.
Imagine at that, because I got a payout from, I had very little on, in comparison to like my overall crypto stack. I had left some like Litecoin and like one Ethereum on BlockFi, so it wasn't that big of a deal for me. As compared to what I've seen other people, like I know people who lost multiple Bitcoin and I ended up getting some sort of a payout for it. I can't remember what it was. It was a fraction of what it was, like 10% of what my actual value was. Yeah, that would be one of those concerns. And it's also crypto lending and things like that. We have DeFi, we have decentralized financing right now where all that can be handled, where you don't have to rely on third parties and you can do borrowing and lending without central banking. Or banking in general being
so
associated
with it. It operates by smart contract, not by an individual deciding what to do with your
Right. Which is actually what World Liberty Fi is, which is the Trump crypto thing. Like they just bought on an inauguration day.
Bleep
that, Bennett. On inauguration day.
Wow.
Wow!
It's not this day.
Oh man!
It's not this day.
Oh, leave that in, please, God.
Don't leave that in. Don't leave that in.
He just listens to rap music, guys. Don't give him a hard time.
Wow.
On an inauguration day.
Hold on. I need a second. We need to reset the room here.
Oh, man.
I will bleep it. But I'm keeping our reaction.
Oh, man. Whoa.
Carry on.
On inauguration day. on inauguration day, the World Liberty Fi folks, which is run by Eric Trump, Donald Trump Jr., Barron Trump, like they're on the board of this thing. They went and bought $41 million worth of Bitcoin, $47 million worth of Bitcoin, $47 million worth of Ethereum, and so on. And this is meant to be a DeFi platform for people to use for borrowing and lending, and taking loans and all this stuff, right? Like that is a DeFi product.
So you're not talking about the meme coin. You're talking about
not Trump coin. Okay. No, okay. That's a whole other thing.
Got it.
Yeah.
You know, one of the interesting things that I see coming to fruition with the the repeal of this this SEC order here is something that you had in your bingo card, Kyle. The mainstream adoption of crypto in some more meaningful way. I think this is like a real step in that direction. It's sort of the same, in the cannabis industry, with banks not being able to hold money derived from cannabis sales federally, because it'll be legal in some states, but it's not legal federally. So like there's a lot of gray area around that. By pulling this back, I think it paves the way for that. And I don't know exactly how our our benevolent overlord Adam, who's judging our bingo game, is going to judge that one. But I'd be curious to see what this does for the crypto industry and adoption of crypto more broadly.
Well,
this year.
It's the same thing as like a couple years ago. The major company that is the point of sale for major retailers like McDonald's, Walmart, all this stuff, they had integrated like Bitcoin capabilities into their system, but they haven't actually like put it forward yet. So like all that stuff is there. It's just a matter of pulling the trigger because everybody was concerned about the regulation side. Now we don't have to be concerned about the regulation side. As we saw with Trump coin, on-chain crime's legal for the next 4 years.
All bets are off, baby.
I'm watching the wallets of the guys like Ryan Fournier and things like that. Like I'm pretty good at on-chain analytics. I can see what's going on.
Well, and that actually brings up a very interesting point. I wasn't even going to go here, but like, should people be concerned just as much as we might be concerned about a CBDC about the transparency of transactions that take place in the blockchain? If you can fairly easily, and there are companies out there like Chainalysis and Glassnode that can do a lot of deep analytics into the blockchain and understand who's making what transactions. It's not anonymous, right? It's pseudonymous, but you can tell who's spending what and buying what on blockchain. So is that a privacy concern for
like
people?
I use AI systems for wallet tracking on people so I can track people's wallets.
So just know,
yeah,
when you're using Bitcoin, people can track you.
Yeah, like I more so pay attention to Ethereum style stuff because Bitcoin's kind of Bitcoin, all you do is hold it. That's all anybody does with it. everything interesting
digital
that's
gold,
happening.
Joe. Mm-hmm. Digital gold.
Everything interesting that's happening is happening on Ethereum and Solana. That's where everything that's interesting is happening. But sorry for all the maxis who I know will freak out on me.
You know what?
But
who cares?
But I actually try to use this stuff in my daily life.
Well, good for you.
Yeah. The next thing on the list was Judge Block's Birthright Citizenship EO, which we kind of said was probably going to happen last episode.
Yeah, it seemed dubious, didn't it, David?
Yeah, District Judge John C. Konauer in Seattle issued a temporary restraining order halting the enforcement of the executive order for 14 days, described the order as blatantly unconstitutional. So when we analyze this earlier this week, what I was saying was that there is a case to be made, but it has to be adjudicated through the courts.
For sure.
Whether or not the jurisdiction in the 14th Amendment specifically refers to that the law itself recognizes me as a citizen or not.
Right.
Now, the implication there is that if you're an illegal alien, that the jurisdiction doesn't apply to you, but it seems like it does in the sense that if you steal something, you are liable for that. If you hurt somebody, you are liable for that. But if you are...
Yeah, but just because you steal something doesn't mean that... that jurisdiction may have authority over like managing, you know, and adjudicating that crime. But if you're a citizen of another country and you immigrate to the United States illegally, which is really the premise of this whole conversation, you're technically still a citizen of that other country, are you not?
Well, the question in the originalist sense of what was the intent of the people who passed this, there's debate, but it seems to be more in favor of, I'm only looking at this with a minimal amount of research, I haven't dived that deep yet, is in relationship to foreign dignitaries. So foreign dignitary comes here, gets in a car drunk, crashes the car and harms somebody, they have diplomatic immunity. Their children also are not within the jurisdiction of the United States because of that diplomatic immunity. So it's more to cover that than it was ever intended to cover this question of illegal citizens or anything like that.
I see. So it's being interpreted more broadly than was originally intended.
Well, maybe not. I mean, like, well, at least, or that Trump is that what you're saying? That jurisdiction had a narrower constraint earlier, and now they're trying to broaden that. But it could be, to the letter of the law, correct, even if it wasn't originalist. So these are different constitutional interpretation techniques, right? You have contractualist, like what was the contractual relationship that the states had with the federal government, and was this within that contract? You have the textualist, was like, what does the text plainly say? And that's a very specific, that's Judge Gorsuch, he's a textualist. And you have originalist, which is like Alito and Scalia, would be, you know, what were the people who drafted it thought it meant?
Right.
So there's a lot of debate still to be had in that. It's funny because the and then there's like Living Constitution, which is we interpret it the way we think it helps us best.
Progressive
argument.
It's unique and it mutates.
But that might be where Trump is on this one.
Well,
he might be more in the campus. It doesn't matter what they thought originally. It doesn't matter what the people who drafted the amendment thought it meant, or what the states that passed it meant. It means what we think it means.
Is the originalist argument that if you immigrated to this country illegally, that you are now under the jurisdiction of the country in which you reside?
Well, I mean, okay, so note that from an originalist point of view, if you're taking it as strictly as possible, is like taking that to the 10th degree, the federal government really didn't have a lot to say about citizenship for a long time. It wasn't until this amendment that they really had anything to say about it. Most naturalization happened via the states. So that's just, and that seems to be right.
So if this were to go to, say, the Supreme Court for adjudication to figure out if this, you know, rescinding of birthright citizenship is constitutional or not, how do you think it would play out?
Depends on the motive of the judge. You know, this judge is obviously in a different camp. This could be motivated by the judge being a liberal from Seattle. This could be motivated by a textualist approach, which is saying jurisdiction means that the laws don't apply to you, right? The laws do apply to you, right? And then they're saying illegal immigrants, the laws do apply to, where it wouldn't apply to a diplomat from another country.
Because they've gone through a proper process to acquire said diplomatic immunity, whereas an illegal has just walked over the border.
Yep.
And that doesn't count.
Yeah. And so the jurisdiction does apply to you. Yeah.
Gotcha. Interesting.
So we'll see how it develops. I'm going to do some deeper research on it too. Maybe we'll do a deep dive in the future.
Next up, a federal court has ruled that a particularly troubling section of the FISA 702 law, I guess it's a law, right, is unconstitutional. Mm-hmm. The second court held that there was insufficient information in either the classified or the public record in this case to permit the court to determine whether any such querying was reasonable and therefore permissible under the Fourth Amendment. Now, this is specifically referring to the backdoor warrantless wiretaps of American citizens.
Correct.
So this is a kind of a big win.
Yeah, it's important to remember the history here. So Snowden comes out in 2013. Revealing that they have this backdoor access. Congress goes, whoa, I didn't know that. That's crazy.
Wink, wink.
You're full of shit today.
Just listening.
We should pass a law to make it legal without ever addressing the obvious Fourth Amendment questions. Now, the Fourth Amendment question is an interesting one, right? Because it says that the government can't get access to your papers and effects. Scalia, for example, was famous for arguing, well, I don't see data in there. So
which
therefore,
is so terrible.
Well, but that's an originalist case because that wasn't a thing. So his point
right.
is that the from the originalist perspective, that the original you have to pass a constitutional amendment if you wanted to include data.
Yeah.
Right. So the degree to which it should, I'm on the camp of we should have that, right? But if you're trying to be consistent about your application of legal theory, that's a very different question.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this could have a big impact with Tulsi being coming up for DNI. She originally was a big skeptic of 702, said it violated the Fourth Amendment, all that kind of stuff. She's since walked that back a bit, you know, and Glenn Greenwald has covered that very thoroughly. You should check it out. But if this is kind of off the table, or at least it's in judicial process, if she's asked about that as in a Senate confirmation hearing, she can say it's under current, you know, legal review by the courts.
Yeah.
It's up to the courts to decide.
Right.
Right.
Which gives her good cover for, I think, because my view on Tulsi's change of heart on this issue is not that she's really changed her mind. She doesn't strike me as the kind of person who would flip like that after the record that she's had and all the statements that she's on record making mm-hmm. about being opposed to, you know, these impingements on Americans' Fourth Amendment rights. I don't think that she just changed her mind. I think she's playing politics in this case to make sure that she gets the votes she needs to get confirmed by the Republicans, particularly, probably, and also Democrats.
Yeah,
Democrats
are going to vote against too.
Right, who would be, you know, really opposed to her confirmation if she didn't support warrantless searches of Americans. Mm-hmm. So this kind of gives her some cover a little bit, right, I would say, to you know, make that process a bit easier for her because it's no longer, it doesn't really matter. She can say, as you mentioned before we started recording, I support 702 generally, I've had trouble with this clause, and now it's currently under review. So obviously, you know, there's more to be done here.
Yeah, there's some slipperiness you got to build in there in order to get confirmed for sure.
Yeah.
Last I've seen on the numbers on her confirmation was it's 50-50 right now, which would be a tie going to the vice president. So it would be a JD decision, which obviously that would put her in.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's still subject to change, but those are the last numbers I saw. It is funny because remember back when I presented the internet stuff going on with Tulsi about her family member saying that she was in this Hindu sex cult?
Yes.
Remember that? It is funny because one of those, which had no like drugs or sex going on, it was just...
yeah, I believe you strange. Called it the lamest sex cult.
It was Mormonism was stretching.
I think we had a pretty good clip go on that one. Yeah. I believe it was her aunt or something that was the one presenting all of this and saying that she's like, oh, she's a terrible person and she'll do anything for political power. Well, maybe that's what it is. Maybe she's just going for political power and that's all this is. Maybe she doesn't believe in anything.
Well, she was a WEF Young Global Leader, so
which means
we got to be careful.
So was Ivanka.
So was Vivek.
Yeah. Because nobody actually knows what that means. All it means is like, they're looking at you and they're like, hey, want to join our club? That's all. Like, they put the award on people without their consent.
Dude,
right?
Trump spoke at WEF.
Yeah.
He must be part of the
He's a globalist.
He's part
he
of
said,
the cabal.
I have a lot of friends here, which I was like, oh my God, he's a globalist.
Did you guys see, a slight aside, but did you guys see him talking to the Bank of America CEO there? He was on the screen and like the Bank of America CEO, and he just, the Bank of America CEO just like, sucking them off. It's like, we're so excited to work with you, blah, blah, blah. And Trump was just like, you know, I've heard from a lot of conservatives that they're having problems with Bank of America. And just says it right there. It's like, Trump's just been going savage lately.
And then Bank of America put up like a graphic post on X saying like, we don't, you know, debank anyone for their political views. And there was a savage community note underneath it.
Like, I wish you weren't a liar.
Several state AGs have brought cases against you for doing exactly this.
Yeah. Eric Prince claims that he lost his bank from Bank of America. And then, EO from earlier this week declaring a national security crisis at the border. And as of today, 1,500 U.S. troops have arrived at the southern border. Pretty crazy visuals from the border as they're getting out the razor wire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. So big expense. Might be worth it. But
rather that than send it to Ukraine.
Fair.
Yeah.
There are also extreme lines at the ports of entry leaving the United States into Mexico as people are fleeing effectively ahead of, you know,
because Trump's elected
deportation. Yeah. Well, that's
all those celebrities leaving.
It's all the libs and celebrities going to their summer homes in Mexico for the dark, dark winter of the next 4 years. It's interesting. I mean, obviously, Trump's keeping his word here. Obviously, a huge component of the demands from the MAGA coalition to secure the border. Obviously, making good on that. How do you guys feel about U.S. troops in this capacity? Should people be concerned about this?
Seems like the thing you would have U.S. troops do.
Seems legit. Protect the borders.
As the troops I'm looking at right now, they're not even carrying pistols, much less rifles. So this becoming more violent in some way, I don't see it, but it obviously possible. You know, when it comes to like declaring cartels terrorist organizations, we had some interesting blowback from that, from like the Wall Street Journal saying how bad it would be for the economy, which was interesting.
Interesting. What an odd thing to say.
You know, that's actually a funny thing, because Bukele was talking about this on Twitter, where he was presented with the same thing too. When he was trying to crack down on crime in El Salvador, the thing that was presented to him is, you have no idea how this is going to affect the economy, because we very much rely on the criminal economy and how it parallels with the legal economy. And his thing was, because he was having, because I believe he just had a dialogue with Trump too.
I think I saw something about that
happened along that, right?
I hadn't seen that.
I can't remember. I didn't watch it.
I'm over here just fuming about the, I'm with you, libertarians. The drug war's bad, okay? But the reason why it's bad is because of the black market phenomena that surrounds the drug war. So what you want to do is get into the white market. I'm totally with you. We should legalize all drugs. Fine. But at the same time, you have to crack down on the black market. Okay. So just, I mean, like, you got to take, this isn't going to be perfect. It's going to be expensive, right? The bill from this is going to be nothing. But we spend a lot of money on the defense of this country all over the globe. And so doing it on our own border for a short time in order to actually do this, I mean, if it lasts forever, if we're dropping Hellfire missiles on Mexico City, I might get concerned. And we can impose it then. We could talk about it then. But yeah, as of right now, from the actual actions we're seeing right now, I'm having a hard time really coming up with a reason why this is a problem.
Yeah.
That's exactly my, and that's exactly where I was. Maybe I'm a fence sitter, but I think that it could go bad, but it could also be good, where it's just like, I'm down with taking out the cartels. I'm not down for dropping bombs on Mexico City, right? Like, and I think that, I don't think that dropping bombs on Mexico City is where this is going. If it goes there, then I will be against it. Right?
Like, right. That's, there seems like a place we can come into the middle there.
There's a middle ground, I think, that exists there.
And I still wonder to what degree the CIA's black budget is going to be impacted by an actual crackdown on the cartels.
That might be one of the most positive byproducts of a cartel crackdown. Yeah,
think about it like that.
Is killing the CIA's budget.
Kyle, there is a thing from 11 hours ago where Trump calls Bukele the world's coolest dictator.
Oh my God.
Yeah, this is, I'm not going to play it, but I'll just kind of have it in the background here for a second. So like, if people want, they can read it, but it's because he's speaking in Spanish. But this was the tweet that I was seeing where he played a video of him talking about this exact thing being brought to him on El Salvador. Mm. But
he's got a sweet jacket, though.
I was just thinking the jacket's pretty nice.
That is so cool.
Remember when they all wore the capes and we were all like super hyped on the capes?
Make capes cool again.
When he got reelected, yeah. Well, yeah,
because, and Mike Lee was just like, we got to bring back capes.
Yeah. We're bringing back beards now, you know?
Yeah, JD got beard. Elsa, you know, Bukele's, we got Bukele here.
Yeah, beards are in.
World leaders with beards. We should have a beard hall of fame.
It's a return. It's a very return to the old aesthetic.
That's a golden era right there. Yeah,
that is.
For sure.
Super chat energy.
Baby-faced.
Yeah. Okay, let's go on to Stargate. So the Stargate stuff was happening, like the meeting happened, the press conference that Trump had, like it happened right before we filmed last episode, so mm-hmm. we'd only seen a little bit of it. But now there's been a lot more hubbub online. So what is Project Stargate?
And it was tremendously unclear. That was what was so frustrating about
really
the thing.
Is.
They made nothing clear. I'm still not totally clear on everything, but here's what we know. So Project Stargate is a $100 billion initial investment, $500 billion total investment. It is a partnership between the U.S. government, Oracle, Microsoft, and OpenAI to create AI infrastructure. Quotes. Okay. The project includes the construction of 20 colossal, that's the technical frame, technical word, data centers, which are approximately 500,000 square feet.
I thought tremendous was the technical word.
Yeah. that's just Trump's description. Tremendous data centers.
Just tremendous.
Currently, 10 data centers are under construction in Texas with plans to expand to another 10, potentially in other states, depending upon energy mostly. This is calculated currently at 25 gigawatts of energy demand for a full build out. So a way to think about that is an AI query to OpenAI, you know, ChatGPT, to Grok, whatever, is about double the amount of a Google search. So each time you do that, as demand increases, you need more energy to fulfill all that demand. And when you use ChatGPT now and it's really slow, that's because compute, the amount of processing power to run the algorithm that goes to the statistical likelihood that it's going to fulfill your request, is slowed down by the total amount of compute available.
Because more people are using it than they have processing power.
Correct. And the more advanced algorithms use more compute, which uses more energy, right? So when we're looking at AGI, artificial general intelligence, or even further, super artificial general intelligence, you have this huge growth curve, exponential growth curve, especially when you look at the scale of it. AI has gone from literally an idea to something that's in everyone's phones within like 2 years.
Yeah.
Faster. It's democratized, meaning that word technically, faster than any software, mm-hmm. any hardware, anything in human history when it comes to delivering a value to its customers on a massive global scale. So currently, the total use of AI in terms of energy, which is a good way to base it, because when you think of compute, that's a lot harder to abstract. Gigawatts are a little bit clearer. This would be, take another 25 gigawatts of total energy input to the system, right? About a million. This star project Stargate.
Okay, gotcha.
That 25 gigawatts is about what it takes to run power to 1 million homes a year.
25 gigawatts?
Yeah.
Powers 1 million homes.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. So
we just need a couple windmills and it'll be fine.
Yeah, just sick.
We can't hurt the whales.
So the current world deployment of AI is about 60 gigawatts total, right? That's the current world. Europe, Asia, America, all of it.
Wow.
The total demand on that growth curve is 250 gigawatts. That's the most conservative estimate I could find. There are ones that are way beyond that. We're talking 500 gigawatts and stuff like that.
So we're talking about this project, Stargate, is going to add 35%+ of the total available compute and energy power to run AI of our current consumption, mm-hmm. but only 10% of the projected total consumption in what time period?
This is on demand at a time.
Oh, so they're saying there's a potential demand of 250 gigawatts of AI power needed, mm-hmm. and we only have 60, mm-hmm. and we're building 25.
Mm-hmm.
Holy moly.
Yeah. So that's how much more this is going. And that's a $500 billion 20 data center plan, right? So that just shows you how much further we have to go before you could really get to that place where AI is super abundant, super cheap. Noting more compute means more supply means AI is cheaper, right? So that democratizes it faster. And the faster you democratize it, the better gains you can have. And we could get into like the plus side of AI in a second. The government's role here seems to be, not clear exactly, Trump is tremendously unclear.
He has made it clear no government funding.
Tremendous.
Yeah, that the government isn't funding it. But it seems to be to declare an emergency of sorts.
An energy emergency.
Yeah, to level the government barriers to constructing more energy and more and these data centers. So we're talking about if you're building in an area that would otherwise have a NEPA, a National Environment Protection Act, challenge to it, which slows down these projects. It slowed down the projects in your neighborhood, I guarantee you. If there's anywhere near a wetlands or a forest or whatever, or it has a bullfrog that's endangered that lives somewhere in your state.
Smelt.
A delta smelt. Those phenomena gum up these things really bad, right? So this would shortcut a lot of those usual construction constraints.
Okay, so I have a question.
Yeah.
How are you thinking about Trump using basically emergency powers to push this stuff through? Are you for it because it's overriding NEPA? Or are you against it because it's overuse of executive authority?
My biggest challenge is it's a corporatism problem, right? So these will benefit Microsoft, Oracle, OpenAI. Now the compute itself, it seems to me to be structured that anyone can buy the compute. That's the only thing that qualifies as infrastructure to me, right? So they set a price and then they have to do that. Now that would more justify the government's involvement to that degree. Think of it like a space race sort of thing. Everyone's space racing to AGI.
Seems like a good idea.
Well, it might be. Otherwise, China might be the first one to come up with AGI.
Sure.
Right. And if that happens, the gains there are huge. Additionally, that jobs got hundreds of thousands of potential jobs here at stake to be able to build and run these data centers and energy. The government has killed off energy systematically since the 1960s. It used to be Nixon had a plan. It was like by the year 2000, we're going to basically have energy be free because there would be so much nuclear power.
Where did that go? Tesla was still around.
Well, Three Mile Isle happened and we all said, nope. And everyone freaked out.
Right.
Right. So to the degree which this is going to encourage nuclear, I don't know. I think it's going to be a lot of liquid natural gas. That's something we have in a lot of abundance and it's low CO2, but you know, there's things there.
Has Trump ever made public opinions on nuclear? I can't think of him ever talking about nuclear.
Like nuclear energy?
Yeah.
I feel like there
I think
was,
he has. I want to say he mentioned it on Rogan.
Yeah.
They were talking about it, I think, a little bit more in the context of regulations prohibiting construction of things. The wall wasn't thick enough concrete or the right type or something, so they had to tear it down. But I want to say he did mention nuclear.
Yeah, because he always talks about liquid gold, keep Bobby away from it.
But he also says like the N-word. Nuclear.
Nuclear.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the problem where he talks about
a
nuclear.
A different one than Kyle likes to use.
I said inauguration.
So it'll be more, I would say it's approaching a thing that's, I think, more justifiable to the degree that it will be general actual infrastructure of compute that anyone can buy.
Yeah.
So if you have a small AI platform you're trying to build and you can very cheaply get compute out of this system, seems better. Even as Microsoft, this is all going to be Microsoft's Azure systems, which is a benefit to, in this case, what he's saying, an American company. That's what's most important to him. But I am worried about any amount of cronyism to restrain who could get access to this. But if the government rule of their participation in order to build this comes with you have to allow them to build it, that would be better.
Yeah. I'm concerned about that because Sam Altman has been very moat friendly when it comes to this stuff. I mean, going in front of Congress, right, to be the first one to, you know, say, hey, we need to regulate AI, but obviously with the intention of being the front runner, building a moat around his business.
And part of this does pair with Trump's EO to appeal the
whistleblower.
Biden.
Yes.
True.
Yeah,
potentially.
Well, allegedly. We'll find out. I don't know. So Trump did repeal the executive order from Biden on AI safety, which was really important. If you listen to Mark Andreessen, he said that he approached the Biden administration and said, I want to do these AI startups. And they're like, don't bother. We're going to have two AI companies and they're going to be heavily regulated. Right. That was their vision. Now, progressives, if you're at all listening to this.
Doubt it.
This is what your this is not democratizing AI. This is the opposite of that. And is the inevitable result of the need to regulate. If your AI fear is so great, what you're going to do is create a monopoly or duopoly because that's easier to regulate than 1,000 AI startups.
True.
So the end result of the progressive vision doesn't always start with we're going to create a monopoly, but it results in monopoly because what you need to do is regulate because all you see is the downside. You don't care about the upside because your precautionary principle is stronger than what your vision is for the future and abundance and all that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's that. Now, what is the AI danger is the other part of that. So Breaking Points had a discussion on this that I wanted to summarize real quick and see if you had any thoughts on, Joe. They pointed to labor concerns, right? Displacement of labor, government surveillance, and military applications of AI. And that's why we should be concerned. I don't know what that means. You should be concerned. I think you should always be concerned.
It'll take the jobs.
Yeah. But is there a job problem first?
I mean, I look at it in the context of progress. You know, I mean, looking at the famous example of Henry Ford inventing the car, you know, it put all the guys who were making horse carriages out of business. That to me seems kind of like just built into an economy that's trying to find the best way to allocate resources and capital to make products that serve people's needs. And I have no problem with that. I mean, the ultimate inevitability of it is, well, what are humans doing to earn a living? Does that result in a universal basic income? Like, that to me is sort of like unclear, and maybe there's some room for trepidation in the interpretation of what that looks like ultimately. I mean, my greater concerns are just around the more the government abuse of it, I would say, which would probably fall more into the surveillance and the military applications.
Mm-hmm. So like the typical one when people say AI is going to impact labor, it's usually operating what's called a lump labor fallacy, which is this idea that labor is like a fixed quantity that is all the same. And so when you disrupt that the increase in abundance from that doesn't itself create more jobs. And that's what we saw with cars, for example. Blacksmiths were shoeing horses. They were putting on the horses on the shoes on the horse, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of those people became mechanics.
Yeah.
Right? And then what isn't seen is all the positive benefits. And we forget about the positive benefits. So, for example, creation of the automobile might cause or might contribute to climate change. But if it weren't for that, New York would be under a giant pile of horse shit.
Well, and we know that
probably contributing to climate change.
I mean that technically. Like, there were articles written before the invention of the automobile saying the problem right now, and they would literally have parks where the parks are now were giant piles of horse shit places. That's what they were. Where they would scoop all the poop.
Now they're just covered in human shit.
And then dump it.
We evolved.
We grew up.
That's a choice. But I mean, just think about it, right? I mean, like those sorts of problems are not seen. They're often hidden by the progress and advancement to automobiles. Now, it causes new problems like if you're worried about increased carbon emissions and the climate change. Now, it also empowered the average American family to have this thing called vacations, which didn't exist before then because you couldn't travel.
Yeah,
you know, so
totally fair.
The AI will be probably the same way, and with the lump labor fallacy thing itself. It's a lot like the lump labor fallacy is applied to immigration. Hold on.
I'm listening.
It's only this idea that if you have more people in your economy doing goods and services, now if they're unemployed, that's a net drain. But if they are working and they're contributing, what that does is it increases the production possibility frontier. It expands the productive capacity, which means there are more goods and services available, usually at a cheaper price if you don't have government inflating the money supply and regulating things into scarcity. If you increase the production possibilities frontier, what you're capable of making increases, that stimulates more consumption, which also stimulates more jobs to fulfill that consumption. Now, there is a lag time that can happen, right? That lag time can be you could say there's a role for charity in that, right? Traditionally, what we covered that was with the church and friendly societies and organizations, private organizations that solve that problem. That problem is best solved when you have lots of capital stock, lots of savings available in the economy to be charitable with. The problem is that we have a government that incentivizes no one to have any savings.
With low interest rates.
Yeah, we incentivize nothing but debt. Debt in those moments of crisis is the worst thing you could possibly have because you still owe it, regardless of whether you have a job or not.
Yeah.
So, but a savings, that doesn't work that way, right? So you can say to everybody all day long, you should have savings in case you lose your job. But the problem is that all the systems and structures are based upon a Keynesian model that says that all that matters is debt and leverage and consumption. So people respond to that and then they're left out in the cold. We've also destroyed all of the systems of private charity and replaced them with government systems. Mm-hmm. And those government systems work very inefficiently and bureaucratically, and there's no accountability to them, so people are very skeptical of them.
Until Doge. Doge is going to come back with a vengeance.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I mean, Doge recommends privatizing Medicare. I mean,
they already fired their top employee.
I would call him second top employee.
I'm more of a Vivek fan than an Elon fan. So.
Ooh.
Okay.
Take.
All right.
Stick around for the skiff on that debate.
Yes. We're going to get into it.
As far as with the government surveillance and military application of it, I totally understand that. The challenge is that's a government rule, right? They're going to take any tool that is available to them. As long as your foreign policy and your domestic policy is defined by surveillance and war, you're going to get surveillance and war, regardless of what the tool set is. Now, I'll get better with the tool set, but that's not the tool set's fault. So, like, what are we debating here? Are we debating should we be funding Israel, or are we debating should we have AI? Right, because AI has tremendous upsides too that are undermined by your regulation and AI safety stuff that will keep it from democratizing to the average person. Instead, it will be held by the largest corporations.
Yeah, no, that's totally fair. And I see the logic, and I appreciate the idea that having a democratized ecosystem of AI service providers will allow people to kind of maybe inoculate themselves against the malicious use of AI as well. There will be products out there to help you improve your cybersecurity or whatever, do things to, you know, increase your privacy to ward off some of these things. I would hope that those things would be allowed
to
rise to the top.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I can certainly see the benefits there. Absolutely. I would never advocate for like government regulation of a couple big players. I mean, we know how that turns out, and it's not good.
Which
not
is the Sam Altman play. Like, he's very much signaled that regulatory capture is his goal.
So how concerned are you about Sam Altman's real close proximity to this project and to the Trump administration?
I think there's monopolization concerns that exist there.
And to the regulatory side.
and mysterious deaths. You know, I got to see how this actually functions at the end of the day. I like, as of right now, I'm kind of neutral on it. You know, there's also Elon's out here saying that they don't even have the money, which I don't know what that actually means. He's saying that they only have $10 million, but I don't know. Microsoft, Satya at Microsoft is like, no, we'll give 80. You know, I don't know. Yeah. I think there's some Elon hate, like, and obfuscation kind of happening here.
Well, he has fairly good reason for that, though. I mean, let's remember, OpenAI started as a nonprofit.
I agree, yeah.
And then Sam Altman changed the structure and wanted to pay himself a shit ton of money in like 7% ownership of OpenAI, which is, I don't even know how much it's worth, but that's a tremendous amount of money.
Yeah, like, I'm not a big Sam Altman fan.
He doesn't have the greatest track record for being just like an above board, honest business person.
Well, and also, like, imagine if you're doing a startup and you can tell all your funders it's tax deductible.
Yeah.
And then you take the same assets created in your C3 and then just privatize it.
Yeah.
Like that's crazy.
Elon,
you know,
gave him what, $10 million something, or something, for the OpenAI Foundation, and then he just privatized it. And Elon's like, what the hell, dude? I thought this was like, you know, a beneficial venture for humanity, and now it's a beneficial venture for Sam Altman.
Yeah. Which and to defend the free market system of privatization, it can still benefit humanity.
Sure.
It's just not, I think, a very devious way to do funding and startups.
Yes. You know, I think it's smarter.
If they could do that, every startup would do that.
Absolutely.
Way, right?
I think it's smarter and wiser in most instances to do private venture rather than the nonprofit route. I think that's almost always the case. Not always. But,
so why do you think he started as a nonprofit?
But that's the thing, is he started as a nonprofit. It's like, there's lies and obfuscation that's existing here. He's cheating the system. He's cheating the rules of the game. That's a different story, right? It's not necessarily that he went private. It's that he did all this other stuff before going private.
Yeah. Right.
That's the problem.
Well, I mean, or at least that anytime you could take a company from a nonprofit to a private, and I worked in C3s and C4s, guys. I don't know how you do that. That's very strange. Right. And like, the fact that it's being legally challenged somewhere. I remember reading that, but I don't know where the status of that is. It's a very interesting question. So we did have, and I think I want to call a quick audible on this. Let's go into the Larry Ellison.
Yes.
Clip first, and then we can dig into the Megyn Kelly one. This is from the announcement event. Not this one, the other one. Yeah.
This one.
Where Larry Ellison is dropping this bit about the reason why AI and expanding access to AI by more compute is a good thing.
And I think you'll see why the internet is freaking out very quickly.
Once we gene sequence that cancer tumor, you can then vaccinate the person, design a vaccine for every individual person to vaccinate them against that cancer. And you can make that vaccine, that mRNA vaccine, you can make that robotically, again using AI, in about 48 hours. So imagine early cancer detection, the development of a cancer vaccine for your particular cancer aimed at you, and have that vaccine available in 48 hours. This is the promise of AI and the promise of the future.
He said the V word.
And the M word. The M word and the V word together,
which had the whole internet in an uproar.
Not the whole internet, I mean, but specifically the MAHA movement around RFK Jr., the substantial constituency of people who voted for Trump for Make America Healthy Again is pissed.
Yeah,
by
he would
this.
Have had less controversy if he said the N word. Nuclear.
He should have just heiled Hitler. It would have been fine because it's a meme now.
I give you my heart.
No, seriously, I think there's valid reasons for people to be upset by this.
Yeah.
Like, of all the things he could have mentioned for the use of AI, why this?
Well, cancer is kind of a problem.
Yeah, that's my attitude too.
If I'm gonna steal like,
my problem with the vaccine stuff is the mandate side of it. Like, I'm fine with companies making and continuing to update and evolve this technology. Like,
sure,
I'm fine with that,
and I'm fine with that too.
Yeah.
But let's talk about cancer just for a second. As we're discovering more and more that cancer is a metabolic disease, right? It's a failure of the cells to make energy properly for a multitude of reasons. And this is just more of the same Western model of medicine of just treating symptoms, not getting to root causes, which is what the MAHA people are all about. It's what I care about.
Sure.
How do I live a life that's cleaner, you know, in diet, you know, that's properly tuned to like circadian biology. You know, there's all this stuff coming out about, you know, like sleep quality and red light therapy and all this stuff. It's like, we should be looking down these paths. Let's develop these technologies. Can we determine which frequencies of light applied to the body in certain, you know, medical modalities can prevent problems, can heal, you know, abnormalities? Like, let's do that stuff. Why are we making overnight mRNA vaccines?
I don't understand why we can't have both.
Well, we can't. Right. And look, if you want to be a lab rat and if you want to take an experimental mRNA vaccine for cancer because it's the last option that you have and you're on your deathbed, I want everybody to have that option available to them.
So, and to be clear here, what he's specifically talking about is getting it before it can develop into cancer. What he's saying is that when cancer is developing, there are traces of the cancer in your blood. And what AI would do would create the abundance of individualized medicine so that you could take your blood and analyze it very cheaply and efficiently, discover a problem, have a solution created cheaply and quickly, and then deliver to you.
This is just Ozempic for cancer.
Yeah.
Because cancer developing in the body is a result of upstream effects of lifestyle choices.
Let me steel man that side. So don't come after me. I'm steel manning. This is not my actual position.
This is my actual position.
A lot of people don't have the discipline you do, Joe, and they just don't have the knowledge, and they don't have access to the resources to get there. And so there's going to be a lot of people for at the end of life or in their later years who have had a lifestyle based upon the government recommended lifestyle for a long time of the average standard American diet who can't unwind that to not wind up with cancer. So if they do wind up with it and it's detected in the bloodstream, should we not have a cheap and abundant way and quick way to solve it?
That's fine. But also, I mean, just using the COVID jabs as an example, we know that like they're shedding, you know, like there's virus shedding that happens from that. And I know that's a different mechanism, but still, we don't know what all the downstream effects are from this. We don't know what the effects on people around a person has taken one of these vaccines is. Like there's so many risks that are inherent here. I understand why people are really trepidatious about this because we are in an AI space race and we are moving forward so quickly that we're going to move fast and break things, to use the parlance of Mark Zuckerberg in the early days of Facebook. What are we going to break and what are the downstream effects of that? I think it's very, very valid to know what those things are before we just go leaping off a cliff thinking that AI is going to solve all of our problems.
So on Nicole Shanahan had a similar opinion on Megyn Kelly, and it kind of freaked out the world when she said this. Yeah. It's really quite interesting.
And as I said, AI is a computer system. Health, human health is not. It is not. And so there are some good uses of AI in the world. And for those, I'm always happy to be a resource on. For instance, I was just with a farmer and we were coming up with a farm plan. And I was like, man, I would love, you know, if there was an AI that could help me model the phases of deploying a new pasture, you know, raised chicken operation on this lot, on this very specific lot here in California. Wouldn't that be great? Because farmers are really struggling financially, and that's actually a really great economic use of AI. So there's so many I could think about about 250 things that could have been shared in yesterday's conference that are really excellent uses of AI, and I didn't really hear them. Instead, I heard a few that were kind of, you know, out there, and if deployed too quickly could lead to, you know, an extinction event. And so I think we have to be careful.
Whoa.
Whoa.
No joke.
I'm freaking out, man.
So I want to do something real quick and then back into her concern.
Sure.
So what she says that farms could really benefit from AI, I really want people to understand what that means. So to understand what that means is you have to kind of understand something about software and its development and kind of where we got to this place. So originally software was mostly created to solve the problems of large corporations, right? So McDonald's could hire the IT team and the infrastructure to design a point of sale system specifically for McDonald's and have their own servers and all these kinds of things, right? Oracle and so what that meant was very small companies didn't have a point of sale system. So for a very long time, you had very fancy software systems for large corporations, but your local store couldn't get access to them. Cloud computing came along. Oracle's a big part of that. disband industries with smaller enterprises that had similar problems to solve. So think of Toast, right? Where you had general purpose software that you could then host on the cloud, where there wasn't an IT team to embody the cost, and said you had the general purpose software that could solve entire industries, right? What AI will do, specifically enough general intelligence of AI, is you can create very niche, particularized problems solved by AI intelligence. Does that make sense?
Sure.
So that farmer who's getting started and doesn't know everything about soil quality or whatever could very cheaply and more easily create a plan for their agricultural crop.
Yes.
What that would do was mean far more abundance of the same sort of systems that that large corporations have going to smaller endeavors. That is the economic power that she's talking about of AI.
I agree with all that.
Yeah, and I'm not debating you right now.
I'm stating my
agreement. I thought that was a really good demonstration.
Ready to fight.
What she's right about is that Larry Ellison, the Oracle CEO, points to this mRNA thing, right? And how to understand that, and how much that, I get how much that it like triggers people, you know, and totally. Because of concerns with mRNA vaccines, right?
Yeah.
Which if the case is that we don't have sufficient knowledge about the collateral effects of mRNA, well, that's an mRNA problem, not an AI problem per se.
That's fine, sure.
Yeah. And people shouldn't confuse those.
Well, and if what he's talking about is, you know, high level analysis, and I mean, I understand the power of AI in medical technology. I mean, AI is proving higher efficacy at identifying, you know, abnormalities in x-rays and other scans and things than well-trained doctors, because it has this, you know, enormous corpus of data to pull from to understand that's not typically here, that's something for concern. I mean, it's proving to be very, very effective in that way.
And one part of that too is that AI is already regulated anytime it touches a profession, right? In fact, it's largely inhibited by professions. So right now you can't get an AI doctor that has an MD. But the AI is a co-pilot to a doctor, but that keeps the constraint of the American Medical Association of licensing doctors, right?
Actually,
go ahead.
Well, there was a bill introduced. I don't know if I put this in the notes. I might not have, but I came across it and I haven't done a lot of research on it, but I did see there was a bill introduced in the House that would make it legal for AI to prescribe medications to patients. Whoa. If a state approves the use of AI for that purpose.
That's dope.
That'd be cool.
That'd be really cool.
That paradigm that you're talking about is changing.
And right?
Kendall, if you're listening at Frontier, you should look into that.
Yeah. And the question is just, can you defraudulate the AI? Can you trick it? You know, and what does that mean? How to have systems of...
Put it into junkie mode. I need my opiates, bro.
Exactly.
You got it, dude.
So you got to...
Meet me behind the 7-Eleven.
You're a dealer and I'm your customer. You're going to play pretend. But yeah, I mean, but that's the frontier, and important for people to understand is even with the potential problems that could come along with that in law and finance and healthcare and across many industries, the question is what are the upsides to that as well, and not underweighing the upsides and the disappearance of the things that we could see, such as the constraint that makes healthcare expensive is the constraints imposed by government. If you make much more abundant the provision of healthcare, there's going to be people who are like, I only trust real doctors. But almost all doctors will have an AI co-pilot at that point, or an agent, an assistant, mm-hmm. that they are then checking what they're doing against. Yeah, a physician assistants are in trouble.
PAI.
But most PAs.
My sister. So.
Most physician assistants actually provide medical care, though, until robots are doing that. And you get into robotics plus AI, it gets very weird.
The AI agent thing was something that actually came up in that conference, too, is they were talking about, like, you just have this AI personal assistant that knows all of your medical records and knows all your medical stuff and will go out and search things for you and kind of let you know. It's like, I'm a little bit worried there's a bit of a problem here. And,
especially on the preventative medicine side, right? If you're like, no, I'm... depending on how controlled it is, if it's certified by the American Medical Association, and we say that's the only one that could be your personal healthcare assistant, then you're not going to get what you're looking at, right? You're not going to get as much preventative medicine. So hopefully, I think there's more consensus there than people realize. I think overall, if you have an open system, you're going to get an abundance of medical AI assistants that can you can choose from the one that both embodies with the things that you care about.
Yeah, like that's the big thing for me is like I just want open and transparency going on with all these things. Like mm-hmm. a lot of gripes that people have with the mRNA vaccine and stuff and everything that's going on with Fauci is just like there's a lot of shady shit that seemed to be going down in there. Like there's a reason he got pardoned, right?
Yeah.
and like I'm open to that research and that stuff being continued to be developed and we evolve our knowledge of those things. I just want there to be some transparency right. that exists. That's the main thing. And I don't want people to be forced
you can't handle the truth
to be, to do things, right?
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think that the maybe a primary concern here is that the trend that we're on is not towards transparency. I mean, maybe it is right now.
We're peeling back a little bit now.
We are
right?
peeling back, but a lot of these things, as we've talked about before, are executive orders, and they can very easily, with the stroke of a pen, be repealed by the next president. Mm-hmm. And if we don't legislate transparency into these industries or legislate freedom of competition in some way, you know, mm-hmm. to prevent further regulation down the road, a new Congress, a new president could very easily swoop right back in after Sam Altman and Larry Ellison have got their hooks in things, and you know, and Microsoft as well, and create the moat that we think we're not creating right now. You know what I mean? So like, I'm not saying that's an AI problem, mm-hmm. but it is a concern because I mean, that's just a corner we can't see around.
That's actually the thing is kind of why I was a little bit more neutral on Sam's involvement with Project Stargate and things like that is because I'm kind of just seeing with the people that Trump has around him, I think the monopolization for Sam is probably staved off for 4 years. More or less. Yeah. And it, like, and then there becomes a question as well, where is this technology in 4 years? Does it make the monopolization more difficult? Yada, yada. Like, so like as of right now, I'm feeling more confident because of that. And it's just like, it depends where policy decisions go during these 4 years. It depends on how the technology develops over the next 4 years. Like there's a lot of ifs that that exist right now yeah. before we can be overly concerned of like this is what's going to happen. We got it, like, you know,
that's no one can tell exactly what's yeah. going to happen. How do you feel about Larry Ellison? Do you have any thoughts?
CIA.
CIA. Yeah, it's pretty well established.
I think there's also surveillance concerns that kind of his visions of the world, which are interesting.
Before right? we. I go into that clip, which we have. I just want to read a little bit here. Larry Ellison, co-founder of Oracle, has been linked to the CIA primarily through early stages of his company's development. Oracle's first customer was the CIA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Yep. For people that might not be
Don't
aware.
Don't be suspicious. Don't be suspicious.
It's important to remember that a lot of your big software companies, especially in the 90s, were directly tied to either military intelligence or... you know, the intelligence community themselves.
So you think he went clean? He went straight?
No. I just mean, like, for example, Google's algorithm yep. was based upon a DARPA grant.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
and look at what Google's doing.
Yeah. Right. So, but
bad
that
shit.
But well, I mean, although they provided tons of value for people for a very long time on being able to search the internet, right? So,
yeah. But this is a brave new world look at what's going on here. We're being slowly strangled to death by convenience. Like we're allowing Google doing something good to sort of wipe away the censorship and the government collusion and all the bad things that they're doing.
To the degree to which it was influenced by government, that's one thing, right? And I totally get that. To the degree to which it was informed by a culture in California that said that middle America was all dummies and didn't know who the president really was supposed to be. It was actually a Russian agent. That's like a disease that I'm not sure DARPA said you got to do that.
Is there an mRNA vaccine for that disease? I'd accept that one.
Trump is the mRNA vaccine to that. Apparently, you see these DEI things crumbling like a house of cards.
Yeah, true.
But you know, but I'm not saying that to minimize it. I'm just saying to contextualize it.
Yeah.
Like you have to consider that the government was the first mover on a lot of this stuff, because they wanted their hooks in it. Remember, and I always harp on this, for a very long time, all of the world's encryption was based upon a company in Switzerland. And we did this for decades and decades and decades in manual encryption from the 1960s all the way till like 2010s. And then we discovered there was a CIA-owned company, right? The problem there is not encryption. The problem there is the intelligence community getting their hooks into everything. So restrain the intelligence community.
Yeah.
Right? And that doesn't mean Larry Ellison's any given statement isn't an authentic statement from Larry Ellison or that it's actually from the EIC.
Right. But the thing to be concerned about, in my opinion, is the culture and the worldviews of the people who are heading these companies need to be closely examined, and we need to decide, are these the people that we want closely tied to the advent of one of the most world-changing technologies that we've ever seen?
Yeah, and that's why this clip went viral, and I want to explain this clip a little bit because it might change your mind.
The police will be on their best behavior because we're constantly recording, watching and recording everything that's going on. Citizens will be on their best behavior because we're constantly recording and reporting everything that's going on. And it's unimpeachable. The cars have camera, cameras on them. All right, we have a squad car here someplace. But those kind of applications using AI, we can use AI, and we're using AI to monitor the video. So if that altercation had occurred, that occurred in Memphis, the chief of police would be immediately notified. It's not people that are looking at those cameras. It's AI that's looking at the cameras. No. You can't do this. It would be like a shooting. That's going to be an event that's immediately, an alarm's going to go off. It's going to be, and we're going to have supervision. In other words, every police officer is going to be supervised at all times. And the supervision will, and if there's a problem, AI will report the problem and report it to the appropriate person, whether it's the sheriff or the chief or whomever we need to take control of the situation. We have, same thing, we have drones. We just, if there's something going on in a shopping center, and I'll stop, a drone goes out there, I get there way faster than a police car. There's no reason for, by the way, high-speed chases. You shouldn't have high-speed chases between cars. You just have a drone follow the car. I mean, it's very, very simple. And the new generation of autonomous drones.
So what he's talking about there is police body camera footage. And unless you're kind of fluent in this space, one of the problems with police body camera footage is it's not one real time. Usually it's actually recorded on the device and then has to be then later submitted. And there's lots of ways of getting around that problem, right? Because you can turn off the body camera, depending on the regulations in the state.
Block it.
Physically block it. There's also evidentiary problems that enter into it where they can kind of stonewall police body cameras, and keeping even their own supervisors from knowing what's going on. So what he's talking about there is rather than having a passive system that hopefully collects what's going on and then hopefully someone brings accountability to that system so it gets up in the ranks of the police officers, you can have AI that's actively monitoring for, use of fatal force by the police. So what's interesting here is to the degree to me, which what he's talking about is a software stack embraced by governments that would actually restrain government and bring accountability to government. And people are saying this is an AI monitored dystopia, because what he's talking about is the cop car having a camera that is live feeding, the police officer having a camera that's live feeding. I can see why police officers wouldn't like that. And there's actually good reasons in there too why they might not like that. And there's privacy concerns as well. But, what he's talking about is a way to use AI to restrain the worst parts of government, which is its use of force against peaceful people.
This is also pretty close to just what Dubai is right now. Like Dubai's whole security practices is
quite similar to this.
the piece that you're not addressing though is where he says citizens will be on their best.
There's
behavior.
The concern is the privacy side of it the citizen side, right? Yeah. That's where there's pros and cons to all of these things, right?
But also noting if a citizen is doing violence against a police officer, right, you want that accountability to the citizen because that is, assault, that's what he's talking about. In interacting with police officers, we get to these really bad moments where the escalation of force is necessary. The immediate accountability, the immediate knowledge, hopefully prevents a lot of the worst outcomes that happen when and lethal use of force.
Just going to help legal proceedings for so many things in general too. Yeah. Like, somebody bumps into your car or something like that. Like that turns into a thing where like, oh, you can actually do something about that because everything's being recorded. But then there's the question, everything's being recorded and there's it's a different world.
And who has access to the data and what else is it being used for?
Like there's good aspects and there's bad aspects. And there's probably going to be technology that helps with those bad aspects too, right? Like there's probably going to be certain things that you can use for like blockers on things and
the world's going to be a nutty place in a few years.
And I'm not saying that, therefore, all surveillance is good. I'm just saying what he's talking about specifically here is a function of government policy, mm-hmm. right? And your current government policy, believe it or not, folks, sucks. So if you create more systems of accountability to the police and their deployment of lethal use of force, that's a good thing, right?
You know what I would be for? AI monitored body cameras on congressional representatives and senators.
Let's do it. Yeah.
I'm down for it.
I think that would be pretty okay.
Just everyone gets a debt badge with an AI monitored remote. Just Massey should start making those.
Yes. Thomas Massey. You heard it here first.
And I'm also
I'll DM it. He follows me now.
I think one of the concerns here is as well is the private use of this and what the private use of the surveillance might look like. And that's where it can get very dystopian there. And I'm open to especially strong privacy laws when it comes to those sorts of things, when it comes to private use in the general public. For sure. But if you're on my property, I should be able to record you on camera. Of course, just like you can now.
Yeah.
Having an AI that monitors that actively seems like something I should have the right to do on my own property. Mm-hmm. But in the public sphere, outside my property, to what degree do those reach? That's where it gets very dystopian.
Yeah, and that's where policy is going to come into play. It's where some conversations as a society need to come into play.
Yeah.
Right? But, like, I use Dubai as an example. Like, Dubai is one of the safest cities in the world. And this type of AI monitoring, like, much lesser form than what Larry's talking about here, but and how everything kind of talks to each other, like, very safe place. Because, like, everybody that goes there, cleanest place, safest place that exists, right?
Employees may or may not be like wage slaves who have their passports revoked, but I think it's pretty cool otherwise.
Yeah. I was safe. Safety aspect.
Lots of liquid gold.
There's things in there. There's things in that city that you might not like, but that's not the conversation that we're having on this, right? Like those things are working quite well, and everybody that lives there is pretty happy about it. Yeah.
And we know Kyle likes the women burkas part, you know.
Yeah, that's what I'm
that's
going
what
for.
What talking about?
Dubai's a very liberal city.
No, I'm kidding. I am operating on a like stupid stereotype.
Dubai's like the most liberal monarchy that exists.
That's wow. why you like it so much.
It probably holds more truer to like Western values than America does anymore at this point in time in a lot of cases.
I've never been. Maybe we should take a team field trip to Dubai.
I know a bunch of people out there.
Let's do it. All right, I think we're going to wrap up there. For David Rand, for Kyle Mack, for Bennett on the buttons, my name is Joe Sheehan. Thanks for watching Human Reaction. Like, subscribe, and join us in the Discord. Link is below. If you want to enjoy the conversation that we have in between shows, suggest topics for us to talk about, you can do that there. Also, if you want to become a member and get access to our weekly members-only shows called The Skiff, please go to humanreactionpod.com to find out how. We'll be talking this week about Vivek Ramaswamy and all of the controversy that's going on around him with a very special guest. Hope you join us. Thanks for tuning in to Human Reaction. Please be sure to like, follow, subscribe, and give us a review on your podcast platform of choice. And if you want to become a member and support the show financially, check out humanreactionpod.com. And remember...
Wow!
It's not this day.
Oh, man.
It's not this day.